How's it going?
Good.
Good.
Have you started?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have started.
All right.
So, it's one more day. This is it.
I know.
What are you doing here with me? Shouldn't you be out pounding the pavement? Or have you pounded at all?
Well, I have been, and I was doing that right before this, and I will be doing that right after this.
Does it make a difference?
Knocking on doors?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Because don't you think one at a time, you just think like, how am I supposed to get to everybody? How am I supposed to make a dent in these numbers by knocking on doors and probably saying the same thing over and over and over again?
Well, that's why you start early, right? You don't do this right just during the red period. You start knocking on doors early, but you're also involved in the community, so mm-hmm. you have met a lot of people.
Are you allowed to knock on doors before the writ's dropped?
Yes.
So you can just go and campaign to anybody, anytime?
Yes. I think the rules doesn't permit you to enter buildings. But if it's, you know, houses on the street, it should be okay.
Oh, okay. So you were doing that beforehand?
Yes.
It didn't seem like Andrea Horvath was doing that stuff beforehand.
Campaigning?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, all...
It seemed like there was no headlines from the NDP until it was all about not about stopping Doug Ford.
Well, you know, ever since the leadership change in the Conservative Party and Ford being selected as their leader, he has taken quite a bit of space in media, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he just consumed so much of that oxygen yeah. in the media that there wasn't, other voices were not getting as much coverage. So
do you think that Doug Ford is the reason why Andrea Horvath's doing so well, right?
No, I don't think so.
If Patrick Brown was here, a real candidate, a guy who had put in so much work, so much time, so much energy into creating an actual platform, for one thing, would it be a more of an uphill climb for the NDP?
Well, you never know with campaigns, right? Like, who knows? Maybe Patrick Brown would be in the same place as Ford, or maybe he would have been better or worse. Who knows?
But because Doug Ford is so polarizing, that's got to have helped the NDP.
I think that definitely, you know, the NDP platform has resonated. People are talking about pharmacare and dental care and things like that. And so us talking about actual issues right. and putting yeah. out a platform for everybody to see, yeah. we did that way before.
It's really helped having a platform versus yes. not having a platform. And you can totally see how that was good politics in the beginning. For the Tories, right? We're not going to show our platform. If he has something to talk about, he's going to screw up. That was a good strategy. But now it's weird that people are like now, okay, yeah, I got that. There's no unforced errors, but we also need more than just...
Yeah. So I think that perhaps their camp underestimated voters. They thought that, you know, maybe just... the mood for change would be enough.
Yeah.
But I think voters are asking the question, okay, we want change, but what kind of change are we talking about?
Yeah.
Right?
Do people vote for the MPP or the leader?
I think there's a bit of both. I think they take both into consideration. I know for sure when I've been going around, especially given that in Parkdale High Park, we have been the kind of riding that also looks very carefully at candidates and, you know, basically whether the candidates have been involved in the community, what kind of work do they come from, things like that. This is a riding that I think looks at both leaders and candidates.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, like, engaged people.
Exactly.
A lot of educated people.
Yeah, you can tell.
Educated politically, I mean, like, people pay attention to hear.
Yeah.
That was never me. That was never my thing.
In this riding, we had 7 all-candidates debates. Can you imagine? There
wow.
are ridings that have had 1, maybe 2 or 3.
Yeah.
But we had 7. And all of them had great turnouts. People were lining up to ask questions for all mm-hmm. candidates. So I think that's another indication of how mm-hmm. people in this riding are very engaged.
And yet, what do you expect as far as voter turnout?
Well, I am pretty sure that Parkdale High Park will be right up there among the top in terms of voter turnout.
Like what's that, like 60? You're hoping for like a 60%?
I don't think it has ever hit as high as 60%.
Isn't that crazy? Well, not since the 40s or whatever, when it was regularly 80%.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think partly it's because, you know, people feel that there's a lot of cynicism in politics that turns people off from voting.
Yeah.
And but in Parkdale Hyde Park, we've consistently had greater turnout than most ridings.
It's amazing to me that people read platforms. This is
That's
the first
great.
Election
That's
that I've ever read all the platforms available.
Oh, good.
It's still, like, my eyes still glaze over towards the bottom. It gets really boring. I don't ever blame people for being disengaged, because on the surface, if you don't dig down a bit, it's just boring.
Mm-hmm.
It's just talking points. I think that's where the cynicism comes from, is that people hear politicians saying the same platitudes all the time. And if there was just somebody that actually spoke to people like people speak to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that disconnection out there?
You know, I think definitely saying and talking about things is one thing. The other thing that it's important to look at is actions, right? Who has consistently, you know, acted on the important issues that are, you know, impacting people.
Yeah.
And you'll see, for example, on housing issues, right? Consistently at Queen's Park, any opportunity, and the NDP has been bringing up housing issues.
Yeah.
We've been tabling bills and amendments to bills that would help people.
How does government communicate that without boring people? Like if I get a flyer saying, hey, look at all of Kathleen Wynne's accomplishments, or anytime she talks about them, it is just like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of me that lumps it in with paying bills, doing all that boring adult stuff that I'm still surprised I'm asked to do. Because so much of me is still like a drunk 25-year-old. And so I lump it all in as more responsibility.
Mm. Well, you know, there are many, many ways we communicate. And one of the things that, for example, an MPP does is, you know, making sure that he or she's accessible, making sure that anytime there's any concern, whether it's via email or phone call or even in-person meetings, that you talk to people about what you are doing about the issue that they've raised, making sure that you attend community meetings and then talk about what actions you plan to take or are taking in the legislature, right? So it's not just about flyers in the mailbox. Sometimes, of course, to make sure that everybody knows what's going on, we put out newsletters and things like that. But at the same time, it's the everyday little things that, you know, you keep connecting with voters.
I'm just wondering, like, voter turnout used to be higher in some bygone era. Why isn't it? Why did it go down? What were people doing something right back then? Or was it just what if we were like Australia and it was mandatory that you had to go and vote?
Right. It's interesting. I don't know.
What would happen then? Would you have a bunch of uneducated voters? Maybe that's worse.
Well, I don't know.
Because I have to be here. I have no idea who to. I'll just mark the X here.
Well, I think, you know, in every system, there's going to be things that work and things that don't work, right? And so, you know, if you want to combat low voter turnout, one of the things I think we would do is to make sure that we take every possible measure to make sure that we are making it easier for voters to go to polls, to make sure that it's, you know, accessible to people. And absolutely making sure that you're actually talking about the issues that are impacting people. And it should be about believing in something, voting for a platform or a person.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I have to say something.
Yeah.
For somebody who says who's not engaged in politics, you have a podcast.
I know, that was the whole point. That I wasn't, I became engaged in 2015. But it wasn't for Justin.
Mm-hmm.
I had always voted NDP. It was against Harper.
Mm.
It was so, it physically hurt every time he would prorogue something.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the same feeling when Rob was mayor. And there was this malaise, at least within my bubble, there was this really low morale. And now it's happening again. And I've never been good at reading newspapers. So I try and talk to people who have read things, who can tell me. Because I think we learn better this way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I have to tell you, I have heard and actually spoken to a lot of people who talk to their neighbors, right?
Yeah.
And there is that discussion. Mm-hmm. And it's great to have that kind of discussion because mm-hmm. sometimes you either find out new things, sometimes you get a different take on a particular issue. Mm-hmm. And also you learn what is important to your neighbors, not just to you, right? Because voting is, of course, for things that will help you, yourself, your family, but it's also about your neighbors and your community. So that is also very helpful.
Can you explain the Stockholm syndrome that seems to happen with, like, because you guys, the NDP doesn't get all the worker votes. There's plenty of blue collar, plenty of union members that should be voting orange, but they vote Tory. And it makes no sense. Like, I totally understand. If you're rich, you're just naturally going to go to the guy who's going to say, I'm cutting corporate taxes. But if you're not rich, well, like, what is that?
You know, I think no one party has, a certain base that they take granted for, right? And you always want to make sure that you are constantly communicating with constituents about it. So we have, for example, I spoke to a person who's always voted NDP, and when I talked to him about income taxes, he said to me, look, I fall in that higher income bracket that would gain, see a tax increase. But I think you need to be bolder and actually raise it higher. So you have that kind of, those kinds of people too, that you wouldn't normally think of as NDP voters, but are, because they have progressive
values. Yeah, but how does the NDP get the voters who vote against their own self-interest?
I think that, all parties are communicating to voters in different ways. And so people need to find out, for example, when Ford says, okay, I'm going to cut taxes, right? And if he says, I'm going to make sure that people making below a certain income doesn't have to pay income taxes. That sounds attractive to a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? And they think that, oh, okay, he's the guy who's going to be fighting for me, the little guy.
Yeah.
But then that little bit of extra work needs to be done into looking into how does that translate in terms of whether I got a $15 minimum wage increase versus whether I'm actually just
right.
going
you
to
see a tax
cut.
Right, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, so you have to look
it's
into
it completely.
It's
bigger picture.
Yeah,
it's trying to look at the bigger picture.
No, but it's also the responsibility of candidates, of campaigns, and of parties to make sure that your message and your issue is reaching the voter.
It feels like he reaches them with saying stuff like my friends mm-hmm. and saying the same one thing over and over again. So that, to me, I see right through that. I see through it when anybody says it. I can look at these leaders campaigning and go, this is campaign mode. Mm-hmm. We've gotten to a reality where everybody is just forgiving of a lot of promises. Even the most idealistic, it is cynicism, when like, did everybody believe Justin? Was everybody surprised when Justin flip-flopped on electoral reform? It wasn't so it wasn't surprising. It was such a great idea, and then it was like, yeah, like that's a big one. Right. He was in campaign mode. So we go from this one thing of like, yeah, they're just saying stuff during the campaign mm-hmm. because there are going to be promises broken coming later.
Yeah, but when I talk to constituents who actually do support Ford, and then I ask them, what is it about Ford that makes you want to support him?
Yeah.
People will tell me, or people have told me that, 15 years, what has the government done for me? Mm-hmm. They feel like they've been ignored by government. In the last 15 years, they've experienced it much more difficult to make ends meet. People are getting pushed out of their apartments. People are finding it hard to pay bills,
yeah.
right? So when you have this experience of government ignoring your needs for such a long time,
yeah.
somebody comes along and says, I'm going to fight for you.
Right.
I'm going to be your champion. Then people want to see that kind of
yeah.
action, and people believe it.
I would love to have a reasonable right-winger in here to explain to me why they think Doug Ford is going to help them with evictions and help the little guy and stuff like that. I don't know any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So forgive me if I'm asking you to explain the right wing frame of mind. But I can't.
I don't think there is an explanation.
You can't figure it out when people vote against their own self-interest. It doesn't make any sense because 99% of the time we act with our self-interest as the paramount driver.
You know, I don't think anybody is consciously voting against their own self-interest.
Right.
It's not that.
Yeah.
You know, I think we just need to do a better job of making sure we connect with everybody and make sure that they know the impact of Ford's policies on them and impact of our policies on them.
Yeah,
right?
It's hard when he doesn't have any policies.
Right.
Okay,
as
let's
in
talk.
Removing rent control is a policy.
Is that what he said?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
He wanted to let market dictate rent prices.
Right, that'll help the little guy. So let's talk about the $15 minimum wage. I thought that was such a good idea until on my street, on Roncesvalles, mm-hmm. businesses started closing and or changing their business practices, small businesses, because they could no longer afford things. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite restaurants, they quit doing brunch as soon as the minimum wage hike came in.
Mm-hmm.
He had to lay off 8 servers.
Oh my goodness.
And now once a week, the owner is doing the dishes in the back. So that was just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else said, and this is, of course, my only evidence is anecdotal. I don't actually do any research. Somebody else told me that a minimum wage hike like this will lead to, it'll just be A&W's and Tim Hortons. Those are the only people that can afford this.
No. That's taking a much too simplistic view. If we look at all jurisdictions, especially in the U.S., because the Fight for 15 came to Canada from the U.S., right? There, they had a much higher rate of increase because their minimum wage was lower than in Ontario. And not only that, if you look at studies and actual research, it shows that a higher minimum wage equals more money in the pocket of consumers and the pocket of the working people, working families. And that means people are spending more. There's more economic activity generated. Businesses will have new and more frequent customers because now people have more disposable income to spend. Right?
Okay, but my wife had a high-end clothing store on Roncesvalles.
Okay.
She had to... The margins were slim. Retail clothing is not the way to make a gazillion dollars, we discovered. So she paid her employees more. Mm-hmm. She paid their CPP.
Mm-hmm.
She paid their vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So they got more money out of it. But people that are making $15 an hour can't afford to shop at her store. The stuff is too much. I couldn't afford to shop at her store. And I don't look good in exercise tights. So they would go and spend the money elsewhere. The money wasn't coming back. It wasn't a reciprocal agreement.
So a few things I want to point out. So first thing, your friend who had the restaurant.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting that was their experience because currently in the minimum wage legislation, servers are excluded. Servers are not part of the $15 minimum wage.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Didn't it go up to 14?
No, there are
exemptions. 14?
There are exemptions on the minimum wage. So anybody in restaurant industry doesn't qualify for that. That was part of the loophole that the NDP wanted to close. So I don't.
So the NDP wanted to close that loophole, so they would be included in the hike.
Exactly. So because when we say minimum wage, mm-hmm. it means minimum. Everybody
right.
gets that.
Whether
minimum
you're
wage.
Getting tips or not. Whereas
whether
the
you're
Liberals were
or
saying
student.
There were the tips involved mitigate this. Is that why they were excluded?
That was part of the rationale, and also they excluded students from it. Right. So if you're a student, you don't qualify for the minimum wage. So we were saying again. Minimum means minimum. Everybody starts at 15,
yeah.
and then you can have an upward effect.
Oh, so I wonder what happened with the restaurant.
I think there are perhaps other reasons to their business decisions.
Yeah.
But you know, one thing I'll tell you is when I talk to small business owners, I have to say more than minimum wage, people are talking about MPAC. Do you know MPAC? the Municipal Property Assessment Corporation.
Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah. Sure.
So because one of the things that is perhaps the highest cost for small business owners is rent, followed by energy costs. That is a much greater expenditure than more salary-based, you know, wages. So part of the reason why rents are so high, part of the reason why we see a lot of small businesses closing is because this provincial body called AMPAC assesses what the property value is, right?
Yeah.
And the principle that they use to assess property value is on a best use principle, not on actual use. So they look at the space and think, okay, what is the best use of this space and how much property tax could we collect? Most often than not, it's calculated as if a condo was going to be built out in that space.
Oh, I see.
So they assess that property value at a very, very high rate, resulting in very high property taxes, which then the landlord passes on to small businesses who are renting the space. So their rents jump through the roof. And this is exactly what we saw along Yonge Street. I don't know if you've been to Yonge Street recently. All the small businesses that used to exist between Wellesley, College, Dundas, they've all closed, and you see many new condos being developed in that area. So we need to make sure that MPAC is actually assessing the property for what it's being used for,
what is actually in that space.
As opposed to hypothetically what it could be in that space. So that is a big, big concern and cost for.
Do those also drive property values up? Does that affect the real estate market?
I would imagine, of course, yes. Yeah.
Because, I mean, at least when I lived in Vancouver, your assessment was always, in Vancouver, your assessment was always behind market value. The things were different. But I don't know, maybe it's a driver here.
Well, part of the problem is that MPAC does not reveal their full formula. So we don't know what exactly are all the variables that they're using.
What is this thing?
MPAC is actually one of the least transparent governing bodies.
And is it provincial?
Agencies, yes.
Well, that's bullshit. I remember them coming to my house, but I didn't let them in. I saw them. They left a big blue note. We had just renovated. I was like, I'm not letting you in here. You're just going to...
You know, we have a University of Toronto math professor here, David Tall, and he has been following and studying MPAC for a very, very long time. And he's produced some pretty compelling information about how MPAC needs to change.
Well, great. Maybe I'll have him on the show.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, let's get personal. It's the end of the campaign.
Yes.
Are you relieved? You just said relieved with your eyes. I'm going to out you. Your eyes gave it away. You are so tired and you're sick.
Well, you know, this campaign has obviously, it's not just the 1 month, right? Like I said, I've been out knocking on doors for many, many months.
Yeah.
And
did you have a job you had to put on hold or something?
Well, I did work with our former MPP chair, DeNovo, at Queen's Park. And so when she
resigned... What was your role there?
I was her executive assistant at Queen's Park.
Oh, okay.
So...
When she resigned... Oh, how did that go down? Did she say you should take over?
No.
Or did you go, maybe I should be the next?
No. So Sherry actually announced about a year and a half ago that she would not be seeking re-election.
Yeah.
So everybody knew that.
Yeah.
And the Riding Association...
She was returning to the church.
Yes, at that time
she
is back at church, but at that time she didn't know where she was going to go, but she did know that she would not be running again.
Yeah,
so she made that announcement, and so the Riding Association, like all parties, we go through a candidate selection process and a nomination process, and so I decided to throw my name in there, and I actually got nominated before she resigned.
Oh, okay. And so how did you make the decision?
Well, you know, so here's an opportunity. For me, I've always been politically conscious. I've always been active.
How come? Where did you get that from?
I think it's because I'm Tibetan. You know, because when you are Tibetan, you are born conscious of the politics of yourself, your family, your history.
How? What do you mean born conscious of politics? Politics is an unnatural thing.
Well, that's because of you, your life and your lived experiences, right? So most Tibetans are born in exile, right? So in our generation especially,
are
born in Nepal, India, Bhutan, other places. My parents, for example, escaped from Tibet with my grandparents. They've lived through that history,
right,
of being in exile. And so the only way you can teach your children and the future about what exactly happened is you tell people, you know, you tell stories about your experiences. You want to preserve your culture as well. So you are, I was born into this environment where I'm conscious about my people's history, where my ancestors come from.
Is that stressful? Like, are you living, like, do you come out of it sometimes and go, wow, I've been anxious my whole life because I've always been in exile?
No.
What about your parents?
No. I mean, you know, it's something that you always carry with you, and it definitely shapes you, your views, your life. But at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We need to, you know, make a living. You need to get on with your life. You need to raise your family, you know. So there are all these other things that are things
when
that...
When did your parents land in Parkdale? In Parkdale? I just imagine they landed in the Jameson Corridor. Like, that is our Ellis Island or something. When did they come?
2002, and you're absolutely right. We landed in Parkdale.
And 2002, like that was a different Parkdale back then.
Yes, exactly.
So wait, they escaped a country because of the Chinese.
Yes.
And then they got to Parkdale of all places.
No, not
directly.
Were
they just like, oh my God, what are we doing here?
No. So this is back, you know, in 1959. Then my parents were in Nepal.
Oh.
So in Nepal is where I was born.
Oh, okay.
And then we came to Canada in 2002.
Okay. So wait, what happened in 1959?
1959 is when Tibet's capital fell to the Chinese.
Oh, right. So, and then your parents left. Why 2002? Why was that? Because they had you?
No, so I was born in Nepal. Mm-hmm. But in Nepal, Nepal was going through its own issues, right? We had a civil war. The monarchy fell. Actually, the entire royal family was massacred. So there was a lot of political turmoil in Nepal. So that was the time to leave.
Right. And so no one else is politically, has been political, has like run for anything or like in your family?
No.
You're the first?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I am the first Tibetan in North America.
Really?
To run for political office.
Wow.
Well, actually, no. There was one person a long time ago, but I think he ran for the Conservatives in Quebec.
Speaking of Stockholm Syndrome. Okay, so you said to your husband, I want to do this.
Yeah.
It means, and now I'm just imagining your conversation. Uh-huh. It means like I won't be making any money. Is that correct? Is that how this works?
Well, after Cher resigned, I got laid off, yes.
You got laid off?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be making any money.
I had a little bit of severance, yeah.
You had a severance package. Mm-hmm. You'd be working even harder than exec assistant.
Sure.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
Hours a day.
Okay, I think I know where you're going.
Go ahead.
This is not about the money.
Oh, no, I know it's not about the money. I'm talking about your time.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
You have a tiny child.
Yes.
Like, you can spend a whole day just doing one thing. When you don't have a job, right? You do your check. I will do my check. I don't have a job, so I do my checklist, mm-hmm. and it's 3 o'clock. I got to pick up the kids. I'm like, where did the time go? How do people have jobs? But now you are now in like a weird sort of, this is sort of voluntary. You're getting paid like a volunteer to work your ass off. How's it going?
Good.
Were you surprised by anything?
No, I mean, I knew exactly what I was getting into. My family knew exactly what they were getting into.
Yeah.
And everybody was behind me 110%.
So no fights. No, like, you're going out again?
Not
Come
at
on.
All. No.
No.
I have to say, everybody, especially my partner and my family, they've just been so wonderful, so patient, so helpful.
Yeah.
I just couldn't have asked for, you know, a more loving and supportive family.
No times where your husband was like, no, I'm not coming out. No, I can't shake
you
more hands.
You would be surprised.
I can't.
You know, he has a very stressful job.
Does he?
He's a tech executive. And right after work, he comes to the campaign office, puts up signs. He loves putting up signs.
Does he pack a? Does he put a beer in a thermos or anything like that? No. I'd always be sneaking a cocktail.
No, because you have to drive around to put signs up.
Oh my God! You don't even have anyone to drive for you. You got to drive and put the signs up.
No, my husband is. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
So what a saint.
He actually loves it because, you know, he told me that it's actually stress relieving for him to be physically working and using his
hands. Did you guys meet?
At the Tibetan Film Festival.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
Why was he there?
A mutual friend forced him to come with him.
Great.
So he didn't mean to be there.
Yeah.
He ended up coming and we met.
And where do you guys live now?
In Hyde Park.
In the park?
No, just across from the park on Bloor, near Kiel.
What's that smell at Kiel and Bloor? What is that? I've always wondered.
Do
you know that smell?
There is a smell.
What is that? It's terrible.
I keep asking myself, what is that smell? I think it comes from the park.
Oh my God, what are they doing in there?
It's probably, you know, because that smell is usually when it gets warmer. So yeah. I think it's things decomposing.
I think it's the sewage.
Possibly.
Oh, yeah. My God. And that gas station up there. Anyways, I hope you don't have to smell that all the time. Okay, so how are you feeling now? And where do you get it from? Like, is it this feeling that you're having now, if it's confidence, if it's hopeful, is it from the numbers? Or is it from being Tibetan?
No, it's from knowing that I gave it all.
You did.
You know, I have done everything that I could have possibly done under the sun to give it my best.
Yeah.
And it's because I have such a wonderful campaign team with so many volunteers who are very excited, who want to be part of the campaign. So at the end of the day, tomorrow, regardless of the result, I know that we've run an excellent campaign.
But you're going to be sad if you don't win.
Of course.
Are you going to be stressed out when Doug wins?
Oh, I'm really, really hoping that that is not the case tomorrow. But I think that in the event that he is the premier, you know, it just means now the real work begins, right? We have to make sure that the things that he wants to do, we stop him from doing, and we fight against anything that would harm our, you know, our public services and people in our community. So I have now today and a little bit of today and all day tomorrow to make sure that Doug Ford doesn't win.
If he gets a majority, then that means he only has to answer to his own people. Is that right? And he can do whatever. He can get that Ferris wheel going on down by the water. He can do whatever he wants.
No. Doug Ford is going to be facing the people of Ontario. And the people of Ontario will resist against any kind of cuts or, you know, giveaways that he might give to his
friends. So you're hoping even the people that vote for him will stand up and speak their minds?
Well, I think that, you know, right now there is a lot of support for Doug Ford because they're just... There are people who are angry, people who want to see change. There is no platform really that he's running on.
No.
So we will have to wait and see what he, you know, what kinds of things he's going to do. But I think even a lot of his supporters, you know, will probably not agree with everything that he does.
What keeps these people going? Why do they keep wanting to do this? Like Kathleen Wynne, I would have hung it up years ago. I would have been like, okay, I get it. I'm sick of people saying I'm unlikable all the time. But she just keeps on going. She said recently, I read somewhere, it was after the third debate that she, when the numbers didn't move and she performed well, that she realized she wasn't going to... Come on, isn't... She was the last to know.
Well, I don't know what is going on in there, within their team or in their party.
But what keeps people going? What keeps Andrea going after how many years? 11?
Yes, I believe it.
11?
Nine, I think it's 9.
9 years?
Yeah.
What keeps you going? If it's not the money, what is it? Where is it? Or is there laughs that I'm missing?
Oh, no, no. So, you know,
perks?
It's this continuous... it's the feeling that, you know, we need change, that
yeah.
we can do so much better than what yeah. we have right now.
But okay,
and
but,
being motivated by that.
Yeah, but like a thankless job one can only do for so long. No? I mean, even children grow up and leave the house, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a little me time. What is it in, like, child-rearing years to be the leader of the NDP for 9 years? Isn't that a thankless job?
It is definitely, but I think that, you know, sometimes what people don't understand is when you are a parent, right, there is that extra motivation that you want to make sure that your community, your province is actually, it's left in good hands for the future generation. Mm-hmm. There is that added sense of urgency that you need to do something about things. So while, yes, there are responsibilities and things that, you know, you might need to attend to, but there's also that extra motivation that you get because you are a parent, because you have a family, because you have people in your community that really need action or changes on a particular issue. I can tell you, you know, I always felt and thought that childcare was very important, but then when I became a parent mother myself and I struggled finding childcare, I knew how much more urgent it got all of a sudden,
yeah.
right? And so even though right now the childcare plan that the Liberals or the NDP are proposing is not going to impact me in any way, mm-hmm. there is that extra sense of...
Sure, because you remember.
Need, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know. Because parenting is scarring.
Scars how many
you for
kids
life.
Do you have?
2.
Oh, how old are they?
Do I act like I have 12? They're 8 and 6. How old is yours?
3 and a half.
Oh, so cute. So did you just come out of the weeds? I remember that. Like 3-something changed and it got way easier.
Yes. I have to say, it's probably the same for all parents, but you find that all of a sudden they understand you.
Yeah.
You can reason with them. And they're so much more independent,
yes,
right?
They're not just these smudges. Yeah.
So, yes, she's definitely hit that stage. And so it's easier.
Okay. Do you feel guilty when you're away from her?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not so much guilt. It's just I miss her.
Yeah.
And I want to spend time with her. So I try, whenever I get a little bit of free time, to do, like, you know, video calls. And
oh, right.
See what she's up to. And
so that doesn't make you miss her more? I find the video hard.
No, but she's having a lot of fun, which makes me happy.
Yeah.
And which makes me feel that, oh, okay, that's good.
She's yeah.
She doesn't seem to be missing me that much. She's busy in the playground. And
that's something that I've had to figure out on my own journey as a parent, that I can need them too much. That it's good that it's really when I realized that my wife said this to me that those kids are also on their own journey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard when you feel like you're still physically linked mm-hmm. somehow.
Yeah.
Like when they hurt themselves, my first instinct was to get angry. I was like, why are you hurting us? Stop hurting us.
Right.
You've got to pay attention.
Yeah.
And but that was it was a psychosis that I had to get over. But it was it's that thing of like even though they're not independent, they are
mm-hmm.
of and
of they a, want to be.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too hard. That's too hard. So maybe having an all-consuming job is actually a relief.
You know, I have to say, like for myself,
yeah.
I get fulfillment from many different things, from being a mother, yes, but also being a working woman, being somebody who is career focused and somebody who wants to be involved in the community. I get joys from doing everything.
What's the misogyny been like on the campaign trail?
Oh, it's been interesting.
Politics and campaigns especially brings out some maniacs.
Yes. I've had a few interesting conversations at the door.
Like what?
You know, people want to know whether you're married or not. I don't know that they would ask a man that question.
No.
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't even occur to me. And then we'll be listening to Metro Morning. We were listening to it one morning. Sorry to interrupt so much.
Yeah,
but we were listening to Matt Galloway interview Kathleen Wynne early in the campaign. And he was asking stuff like, what was it? How are you feeling?
Right.
How are you feeling? But it was Matt Galloway. So it was, and I love him. So he was like, how are you feeling? And then after the interview, I was like, oh, that was a pretty good interview. And my wife said, he would never have been like, how are you feeling, if it was a guy he was talking to. And I was like, of course. I didn't even think of that. But talk about a moving target and heart, like, holy shit, I need some time to recode my entire being in order to not come across like a male dinosaur.
Yeah, unless, you know, people are so used to just living in their own lives that it's very hard for them to think what the other person might experience, that same experience that you have, right? Mm-hmm. That how it means different things. But you're right. You know, unless your wife pointed it out, you probably wouldn't have thought about it.
No.
But it's good that she is pointing that out, and yeah, you're becoming conscious of questions like that.
Yeah, it's good. It's like maddeningly slow, or just like one more thing. And now I think, like, you know, when I was asking you about the decision to run, I would ask that of a man.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be like, so you talk to your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to know about I want to know about those gritty conversations late at night where you're like, how can we do this?
Right.
Can we manage this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, did you ask your husband for permission?
Right. No, I hear you. And the thing is, what a lot of people don't understand about campaigns is it's not just the candidate, right? It's the entire family that's going to be part of the campaign.
Yeah, sort of exposed.
Yes, yes. And
that people are now looking. People want to see all of your people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's that? What's the misogyny like? Is it out and out misogyny? Is it more insidious? Is it?
It's very subtle. Right.
Subtle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have to replay a conversation in my own mind to be like, what was that?
Right.
Because
you're in a campaign mode of like pressing the flesh and talking points and.
Yeah. I mean, like, you kind of want to get to the meat of the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what issues are important to you? What are you thinking when you are, you know, making your mind up in terms of where you want to cast your vote? So you want to get into those conversations, and you're just trying to move past some other things that, you know, people might be hung up on.
And so have you ever lost it? You don't seem like a person that would.
No, I haven't.
Okay, what about racism? Have you found that?
Again, it's subtle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's people, for example, when they find out that I came to Canada in 2002, and they say things like, oh, but you don't have an accent.
Oh,
and you think,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
If I had an accent, would that make any difference to whether
So in their mind, do you say to you, do you rationalize it like, that was a compliment, it just came out poorly?
But that's part of the campaign is that you don't have the time to get into the in-depth conversation about.
But I mean, for your own self-preservation.
Oh yeah, you know.
Can you just let stuff go?
Yeah, I just move on.
How do you do that? Is that also because you're Tibetan? Am I just wired up like a spazzy Scottish angry person, and I hold on to things all the time? I'm not the only one, am I?
Well, you know, I have to say, I don't think it's because I'm Tibetan, but in Tibetan Buddhism, they do say that the source of all suffering is attachment.
I love that. That's so good.
When you...
Yes.
Yeah.
The Stoics say that too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
yeah, they say stuff like hope and fear is the enemy of the present moment.
Mm.
I love that. I wish I could implement it. I can understand it.
Yeah.
Okay, so Last question. What are you? You're going to campaign for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And then what's happening tonight? Like, what's your mental game plan? Wait, tomorrow's the election.
Mm-hmm.
So that means everybody votes tomorrow. Polls close at 8 o'clock. Is that right?
I think it's 9 p.m.
9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Then somebody, something, some machine starts counting.
Yep.
Or are they counting as they go right now?
I'm not sure.
Because my ballot got sucked into a scanner.
Okay. So maybe it's happening simultaneously, yeah, as people cast their ballots.
So what are you going to be doing election night?
Yeah, so I'm going to be with my family.
Yeah.
And when I say family, I mean the entire extended family.
Oh, fun.
How many? Oh, gosh. I had like an open invitation to all my family members.
To your house?
Yeah, to our little tiny apartment.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's just important for me to be there with my family.
Yeah.
And
are you going to have food?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes, it'll be dinner / watching the results,
yeah,
on TV.
And what about a nice Canadian sparkler to celebrate with?
So, you know, every party, every campaign will have an election night party. Ours, mm-hmm, is happening at Rhino tomorrow after polls close.
Oh, fun.
And
yeah,
you're invited.
Don't drink the draft. Don't, not at the Rhino. Don't do it. You got to stick to the bottled beer.
Oh, I don't drink beer, so it's okay. I'm more of a cider gal. But
how are you?
Yeah, so after we know, we find out the results, then we'll head down to Rhino.
Okay, well, best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was fun. Thank you.
I'm glad.